Hey guys, and welcome back to the Becoming Her podcast with your host, Victoria McHugh. I am so excited about this episode with my beautiful friend, Samantha Dreiling. We actually sat down to record this in Arizona, and then a little technical difficulty happened, and so we re-recorded it when I got back to Australia, and I'm just so happy that you guys are going to hear from this beautiful woman. So if you listen to episode 7, that episode was with Christy Dreiling, who is actually Samantha's husband's mum. So if you loved episode 7, you will also love episode 9. It is full of wisdom and life and just so many things that happened for Samantha to be the woman she is today and have her becoming her moments multiple times. So this episode goes everywhere from her childhood, how she got into the world of entrepreneurship, building multiple businesses in her 20s, her decision to go vegan, then her meeting her now husband and falling pregnant within a couple of months of meeting him, going into motherhood, becoming an author. And we also touch on a really important topic around the grief and loss of her father. It's a beautiful, beautiful moment in the podcast and a gorgeous conversation with a really unique perspective on death and what that looks like in your life as we are all going to face it. And then we end the podcast with talking about her brand new business adventure and what is next for her. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. We go everywhere. We were filming from Australia to Phoenix, Arizona. So please enjoy the episode, like and share it. And I hope you enjoy. All right. Welcome to the Becoming Her podcast, Samantha Dreiling.
Hello.
I'm so excited to do this take two, guys. Funny story. Sammy and I recorded this podcast in Arizona together in person when I was there last month. And we got to the end of the podcast. It was over an hour. It was so great. And we didn't press record.
Well, we pressed it, but we didn't press it right. Because then all of a sudden it's recording us going, yeah, that was awesome. I'm so excited to hear it.
So we are not together. Sammy is over in Arizona. I'm back in Sydney. But the podcast was so important that we needed to film it again. So here we are. I'm so excited. Sammy, please take it away. Tell us a little bit about your childhood and how you got into the world of entrepreneurship.
Well, thank you for having me yet again. I'm so grateful to be here and sharing with all of your amazing listeners and having another conversation with you. That's my favorite. So I grew up in Canada, Ottawa, which is the capital city. And I grew up with two amazing parents. We had a great family dynamic for the most part. My parents did divorce at when I was 5. But even in double homes, I feel like I had a really good upbringing. And I feel very lucky and blessed to be able to say that. But it was always back and forth, me and my sister, back and forth between houses, but we had two Christmases, we had two birthdays, all the things. And really when I started getting into entrepreneurship was like, honestly, as long as I can remember, because I was the kid that was having a lemonade stand on the bicycle path and, you know, making $20 every time, which was a lot back then. And I was also the kid who had a craft room. My dad let us turn the basement into the craft room, and then it ended up being another room into the craft room. And so I was always creative. Like, I was always very artsy. I loved making things. He was an artist, and he would teach me how to make paper mache. So I would make all these things, do all these drawings, do all these paintings, and then I would set up a table and do like a craft sale on my driveway. And these were not super cute crafts. Like, they were very much messy kid crafts, but people in the neighborhood would come and buy them. And I remember camping one time in this little cottage on the PEI, which is the cutest island in Canada on the East Coast, and like drawing all these pictures and having a neighbor say, oh, can I buy one for, you know, for 25 cents or whatever? And I remember thinking, oh my God, the more paintings we can make, the more pictures we can do, the more we can sell and the more money we can make. So me and my sister and our friends like laid on the floor of the cottage and just did drawing after drawing after drawing. And we put them in a wagon and we went door to door to all the little cottages and sold them. And we made like 40 bucks. We were like, what? So, you know, that was like, I was like probably 7 or 8 at that time. And then when I was in high school, at the age of 14, 15, I started my first like official company, which was a t-shirt line called Stitched Volume. I was in my my emo era at the time, and my rock, my, you know, punk rock phase. And yeah, so we had a t-shirt line. We made these like cool artsy tank tops. My friend was a really good drawer. So she would do the designs and then me and my sister would like turn them into shirts and then we get them printed. And my dad was our investor and, you know, fronted the $700 to get our first batch. And then we would sell them at lunch hour in our foyer at the high school. And we kept selling out, like, and we would do a bigger batch and a new batch and do a different shirt. And, you know, that was awesome. That was like, that was my start of real entrepreneurship. I mean, it wasn't really real, but like, you know, the first like kind of tangible thing. And I ended up going to school in college for entrepreneurship. It was called Small and Medium Enterprise Management. So I learned all the things there. And at the same time was doing makeup artistry on the side and also started my wellness business online at the age of 19. So then it was like, I was in school, I was working part-time jobs and I was running 2 side hustles to start to, you know, have more flexibility because I was trying to work these jobs I didn't like around my school and that was not working very well. And so, yeah, I was able to quit all the jobs at the age of 19 and I've worked for myself ever since.
Honestly, that's so incredible. I love hearing your story. And I feel like people are, you know, they model their parents. So, you know, whether they go into like a similar sort of corporate background or a really spiritual background, or whether it's in entrepreneurship, I feel like people really, you know, follow in their parents' footsteps. And I know that you said your dad especially was so supportive of you and everything. Before we go into that online business, I really want to talk about that. Can you tell me a little bit about high school for you? Because I know when we first recorded, we spoke a lot about this and I feel like it's a really important part of what shaped you to be where you are now. So just before we go into the online business and how successful you were with that, what was that high school era like for you?
Yeah. So 2 things. Number one is what's kind of interesting is I feel like both of my parents are the opposite of entrepreneurs. Like my dad was very supportive and his way of supporting was very much financially. Like that was like his love language was feeling like he could like financially support me and my sister in any endeavor that we wanted to do. But I feel like my parents are not the risk takers. Like they're not the ones going to step out of their comfort zone. But then there's other aspects of them that I definitely modeled and followed. So, and that kind of can tie in later because I feel like that was one of the hardest parts for me is I felt like they didn't understand why I wanted to do something different. And it was hard to get them to fully support me later on because they were worried for my security, right? Like I think a lot of people go through that when they're doing something different. They're having an entrepreneurial journey and their loved ones are trying to look out for them, but they're like, oh, don't do that. You need a stable job. And it really is out of love, but like, it's not, you know what I mean? And it really can hold you back. So anyways, that's a little side note, but yeah. So when I was in grade 6 and 7, those were like the hardest years. Grade 6 was the hardest year for me because I was super bullied by some of the girls in my class who were like ironically supposed to be my best friends. And that was, it was right after losing my grandfather. So it was like one of the deaths in my life that was, I could understand more what was happening. And they would just, it was just every day. It was horrible. Like just every day picking on me, spreading rumors about me. One of them like pulled down my pants in front of the whole class when we were waiting in line. And then, you know how, like when you're in grade school, you had those, I mean, I feel like most people did, the little underpants that had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
Oh my gosh. I had those all the way out in Australia.
Right. So I was wearing my Wednesday panties and the boys at school, oh, they loved that. They started mocking. Oh, do you have Thursday panties too? And I'm like, yeah, actually, yeah. I do.
Yes, I do. I'll show you tomorrow.
Yes, exactly. But you know, it's funny because I laugh about that now, but at the time it was like, I was so embarrassed. Like I was like, because you know, like those girls like were starting to wear thongs and like, I was like such an innocent little child. Like I was like, so, you know, they were teasing me and they spread rumors about me and it was not good. And I was just such a loving little innocent child that just wanted to be friends with everyone. And I guess I got around the wrong group thinking that these were my friends and that, you know, I think that that's also can lead into later, like unprogramming toxic relationships and friendships and the whole kind of identity that a lot of us fall into around girl friendships. Like we need to support each other and we need to be, have each other's backs. Not that, it's not that. And when you're learning that at the age of 10 and 11, that's friendship, that's something that you have to really unpack and unprogram, right? So there was that. And then I had my first quote unquote boyfriend in that year for a month. And I broke up with him because I didn't want to have my first kiss yet. I wasn't ready. And there was pressure from everyone. You know, it was like the whole school would like walk up behind, like would walk behind the guy. He was like the popular guy. And like, oh, he's going to ask this girl out. Like, you know, I don't know if you had that. That's like how my school was. Anyways, so it was like a big deal that, you know, this person and this person are going to kiss. And the whole school knows we're supposed to kiss. And I'm like, I don't want to, I'm not ready. So I broke up with him and him and his friend who were the quote unquote popular kids in grade six, you know, they put me on the walk of shame because they weren't allowed to be broken up with. They had to be the one who broke up with you. So that led to basically me being bullied by the guys too, because then in gym class where I was not the athletic one. I was the last one running circles on the track. I was the last one to be picked for all the games, pretty much second last, last, third last, around there. And they started to pretty much every warm up, we would do dodgeball or something like that. And they would literally go like this to me, like, I'm watching you, I got you. And they would whisper to all the boys and they'd point at me. And then all of them would whip balls directly at me. And I remember this one time after class going into the girls' change room and like waiting for everyone to leave, all the girls to leave. And then just like sitting there crying and changing and like seeing like bruises on my legs and like red, like huge red blotches from them hitting me with the balls. And so, yeah, it, like that year was really hard. And then I kind of became like, from there, I kind of started becoming the person that everyone would come to. So I had kids that were like being abused at home. I had kids with alcoholic parents that were, you know, going into like rage fits during their drunk alerts. And, I had kids who were self-harming. I call them kids. I was the same age as them, right? Like, I had kids that were suicidal, like, and they were coming to me and I'm like, I don't know what to do, but I just wanted to help people. Like I always back then even wanted to help people. So I just did my best. Like I would just be like, you need to stop doing that. Like you need to love yourself. You need to take care of yourself. Like you, when you feel like doing that, I want you to just call me and we can talk instead of like hurting yourself or whatever. I took on this like therapist role, which I did not have. I did not know it. Like I shouldn't have been doing that. I should have been telling somebody that knew how to do that. But at the time, that's what I knew how to do. And luckily I was able to help people. And I had some of them years later, like I had forgotten this. Like I had just, you know, taken this out of my memory. And I had some of them come to me years later, like college years, and literally say, you saved my life.
Wow.
Like if you weren't there for me, I wouldn't be here. And, you know, so I think that even though like as a child, like I shouldn't have somebody's life on my shoulders. Like I shouldn't, like, you know what I mean? Like, obviously there's things that you can do to help them get proper help. But at the time, that's all I knew how to do. And, you know, obviously I'm glad I did it. But also I'm glad that there's hopefully more resources, and I hope that kids today like use those resources, you know what I mean? And do support one another. Bullying is not cool. And all the stuff that we go through at that age is so hard. You know, there's all the social pressures and growing up and your hormones are changing, you're going through puberty, and there's just so much. So that was really my challenging part. And then high school got a little bit better, and I kind of started finally figuring out a little bit more about who I was. And it was my first year in college that I started my business and was in a pretty toxic relationship, a toxic job, and just wanting a different life, really like wanting a different life, but not in a, I don't know, I've always been very positive for the most part. Like I've always been very optimistic. And so it wasn't like, I don't like my life. It was like, there has to be more than this. Like what else is there? Like, I want to find it. So that was always my driver. And when I started my wellness business and I started to be surrounded by people who had the life that I wanted and who believed in me and who were encouraging me and who were happy and who were chasing their dreams and growing themselves and caring about their health and all of these things, I started to slowly realize my worth and slowly change my standards, which got rid of the relationship, got rid of the jobs, and I started this new path. And it took me many other years to peel the rest of those layers to kind of becoming who I am meant to be. And there's always new layers that are peeling. So it's a really a never ending journey, but there's kind of these levels that you get to where it feels like, wow, I made it, you know, this far.
So amazing. And I think like looking back, the reason I like to start the podcast with like the childhood and the high school is just understanding how much of what we do as kids and the environment that we in can shape us for the better or for the worse. And obviously in your case, for the better. So let's go back to starting your business. You've been through all of that. And you become this person who's just determined to, you know, take life on a different path, and you've got this huge vision. And I think starting a business at 18 is very, very rare. It takes a lot of courage. So what does that look like? Because I know you went through this real journey when you started your online business of letting go of your old self, stepping into this new version of you. So what did that look like?
Yeah. So when I first started, after I kind of cleared out toxic relationship, toxic jobs and all that, I started to really try to be intentional with what I was putting out there. Mm-hmm. So when I was 18, my mom, this is in my book, but when I was 18, my mom sat us down and she said, we're watching a movie tonight. And she put on The Secret. And that documentary changed my life because I realized, which I did not want to admit, but it was true, I was attracting everything that I didn't want into my life. Like, I had to take full responsibility, which I feel like everybody really does. Like, you have to take 100% responsibility for everything in your life. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that other people didn't contribute to it and this thing happened to you. It's not taking that away. It's not, you know, it doesn't diminish any of that, but it's just when you take 100% responsibility, you're not giving your power away to any outside circumstances. And when you don't take full responsibility, you are giving your power away to other people or other circumstances.
Yes.
And it is so much easier to change your life when you take full responsibility, even though it's so uncomfortable, because we want to stay a little bit in victim because we're like, well, that wasn't really my fault. And it's true. You don't want to be this martyr where you're just blaming yourself for everything and you're hating on yourself. That's not what I'm talking about. It's okay, this happened. Now, what am I going to do about it? Because I'm a strong, powerful person and I'm going to freaking change my life.
Yes.
That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And so I had to take that responsibility and realize, you know, what you get, what your standards are. And for my relationship, for my job, for how people were treating me, my standards were low because my self-worth was low because blah, 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 blah. It's this continual pattern that's being created from little tiny things that someone said to you one time when you were a kid or when you were a teen or whatever. And we have to work to reprogram those patterns. So once I realized I get to choose what I believe about myself, because a belief is just a thought you keep thinking.
No one can make you feel a certain way without your permission. That's my favorite.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. So if I want to change my life, I have to change the way I'm thinking about my life and I have to change the way I'm thinking about myself. And so if you believe about yourself, I'm unworthy or I'm unlovable, you're going to keep getting situations. You're actually going to literally self-sabotage mm-hmm. in situations so that stays true. You have to change what you believe about yourself to see a change in your circumstances. And that is, I go into a whole episode on that on my podcast, so I won't go into it, but it's really interesting to understand your brain and your reticular activating system and how it's what you tell it is important is what you're going to notice. So you're going to confirm all the things that you believe about yourself, because that's what your brain is showing you. It's like a red light. Bah, bah, bah. Hey, look, here's another example of that. Mm-hmm. So you have to change what's important. If you think you're unlovable, you have to start saying, I am lovable. I love myself. I don't even need somebody else to love me because I love myself. Now it's going to start to show you all the ways that you're all these people that love you. You're just going to start getting messages. I just want you to know how much I love you. Like, it shows you that because that's what you're saying is important. So, side note there. So as I started to make these shifts, I decided I wanted to be somebody who inspired people. And the first way I knew how to do that, because I hadn't done anything yet, right, was I just thought, well, I'm going to fill my mind with positive quotes and new beliefs. So every day I would post them on Facebook. I would find an inspirational post and I would post it on Facebook. And at the beginning, I had all my old friends commenting on them like, oh, look, here's Sammy. She's a motivational speaker now. And like, oh, are you going to be a life coach now? And like, you know, or they would like mock the quote or like, that's what I saw, you know, I didn't let it bother me. I was like, whatever. This is not where I'm going. This is where I'm going. I'm going to focus my attention on where I'm going, not where I've been, because energy flows where attention goes. Mm-hmm. So slowly but surely, they stopped commenting, because instead of having their comments and zero likes or one like, I started having 40, 50, 60 comments or likes and a few other comments like, wow, I love this quote. Thank you so much for posting. And all of a sudden I had, like, after a few months, consistently every single day, hundreds every day of likes and comments. and people messaging me saying, you're so inspiring. You always make my day better. Like, I look forward to seeing what quote you post every day. Like, that started to change. Then on Instagram, when Instagram started, I started doing these mini videos that were 15 seconds. And it would be like these little educational videos about the law of attraction, mindset, self-love, whatever. And that's how my account grew to its first 10,000 followers, because every single day I was posting a video, and Instagram was very different at that time. And I started attracting people who wanted to learn what I was teaching. And again, I decided I wanted to become inspiring. And people started saying, you're so inspiring, you're so inspiring, because of the actions I was taking to match the identity I wanted to create.
I love that.
Yeah. So, but that was just the very beginning of choosing the new me versus the old me. And it's really hard. It takes time and practice to create the new version of you. And you have to, if you want a new life, you have to give up your old one.
It's so much consistency as well. Like, I even noticed, you know, I had become this new healthy version of me over the last 6 months, and then traveling to the US for 4 weeks, it's so easy to slip back into old habits, old ways of thinking, old versions of you. And then I've come back and I found it so difficult to create that discipline and those habits again.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, being away for 4 weeks. So when you're talking about completely shifting a mindset, beliefs that you've maybe known about yourself or told yourself for 20, 30 years, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. We're talking about years of almost unlearning and then years of relearning. It's a practice. It's a muscle that we're building, that belief muscle, the mind muscle.
100%. And I feel like that's why so many people quit too early on themselves and on their dreams, because they think it's not working because they're not seeing the changes. They're not seeing the results. And the first thing is that their belief hasn't fully changed yet, right? Because they want to see it to believe it. You have to believe it to see it. So if you're not doing that consistent work over and over and over again, just at least to see enough where you're like, okay, this is working. This is happening. This can happen. I know that that I can make this work. Then you're not going to give yourself enough drive to keep pushing through when it is easier to not do it. It is easier to go back to old patterns. And in fact, your body's going to be saying, this doesn't feel like me. I want to go back and sit and watch Netflix for 8 hours and blah, 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 or whatever your old pattern was. Not bashing Netflix. But you know, whatever your old pattern was that wasn't getting you to where you want to go, and you were changing something to help you get where you want to go, it is not going to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
You have to push through that, and you have to trust the process without seeing the result yet, that if you keep going, you're going to move forward, and it's going to get closer and closer and closer. And along the way, you're also going to tweak and get better and learn. And it gets easier and easier and easier once that actually becomes your new habit and your new belief.
Yes, I agree completely. So let's move forward from there. So you started your business, you became super successful, you're working for yourself. Then you decided to become vegan, which, I mean, I'd love to talk about, because I think that that's like a pivotal part of your story, is that decision. So tell me about why, what, when, where, how.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because I don't really call myself vegan anymore. I say that I follow a plant-based lifestyle. However, the identity of being vegan is what helped me so much to change my health and the way that my relationship was with food and my body. So I'm really grateful for it, because if I didn't have a strong identity around it, I wouldn't have stuck to it. And I think that that's important, because, you know, I'm all flexible around like, yeah, you don't need to label yourself, you don't need to label your diet and all that. But at that time, that is what I needed to make an actual lasting change. And so there's sometimes a time and a place, right? So at the time I was working part-time in the bar industry doing promo and bottles and stuff like that. And so I was around a lot of alcohol and, out like 3 or 4 nights a week doing working, and part of our pay was bottles. And so I had like gained 30 pounds or more. And I was like, up till 3 or 4 a.m. and out eating late and just not feeling good, hungover all the time, just feeling like crap. And I had these goals in my business, but this was another layer that came in that was holding me back from where I wanted to go. And so I did this for about 1.5 years, and there was this turning point on Canada Day, the day after Canada Day. Canada Day is a big party day in Canada. And the next morning I woke up, I was supposed to work on my business, and I was so hungover, I literally couldn't get out of bed. And when I was like rolling around in bed, I turned and looked on the floor beside me, and there was a book. And it was this book by Kimberly Snyder, who is an amazing nutritionist, called The Beauty Detox Solution. And it's all about detoxing. And she guides you through this kind of like program of eating whole foods, plant-based, super clean, and why, like all the science behind why you should eat these foods and why for this detox, for this period of time that you're actually letting your body reset and cleanse, you are not going to eat these certain foods. And so it was like a really good guideline that felt balanced to me. I wasn't necessarily like labeling foods as good and bad. It was just like, I need to choose things right now that are going to support my body in purging all the things that I've been adding to it that I know are not benefiting my body, and allowing it time to kind of reset and recalculate. And within about 1 month or 3 weeks of that, I think I had lost like 20 pounds. And I was eating so much. I was just eating good from the ground, whole food plants, basically. And I was trying new recipes, and I was eating like a lot of like raw foods, and like I was still eating cooked foods too. But anyways, just really helped me reprogram my relationship to why am I eating? First of all, like I'm supposed to be eating to get energy, yet the food I was eating was taking away energy and destroying my gut health. And if you don't have your gut health, you don't have a lot of things, because it's literally like the power center of your wellness. And so making that switch was massive for me, because it really set me on this new trajectory of I'm also a healthy person. And that next year I decided to try 1 year with no alcohol. Which I did pretty easily, honestly. Even from going from drinking all the time to not drinking at all, I was like, wow, I feel so great. Like, especially because I had all the food working with me too. And the gut health, like I was making my own kombucha, I was making my own sauerkraut, I was eating fermented foods all the time. Like, I was on it. And I felt better than ever. Like, I just felt so good. So I didn't miss it at all. That really set me into this whole journey of like really loving the science of nutrition and just like sharing a predominantly plant-based diet. And I've been doing that for now 10 years, I think, around 10 years. And I still follow that. I'm not like strictly vegan, but I'm still 99.9% plant-based vegan. And so, yeah, it was very transformative for me. And like I said, if I hadn't labeled myself vegan, I would not have stuck with it, because my relationship with food at the time was very much like emotional eating, right? So like if there was cookies or cake or this or that, it's like I would eat it and I would eat too many of them. Like I did not have balance around it. But I would say I was so strict with it at the beginning. Like, I don't want to say strict because I don't want that to be a negative thing. But for me, it's what worked at the time. It's like, if it wasn't vegan, I wasn't going to eat it. So it helped me to reprogram to want to eat healthy foods that I knew were like adding health to my body, adding nutrients, adding vitamins and all that. So yeah.
Amazing. I love how you talk about it as like the identity of who you want to be and what you want to be as well. Because, you know, as you know, I've had so many problems with, well, not problems, but, you know, different relationships with food, different relationships with my body and health. And I think when we do, you know, identify ourselves in one particular way, it can be positive, but it can also, you know, be negative. And we've just got to almost figure out what works for us, because what works for you just won't necessarily work for me. So yeah. So I want to change gears a little bit from where we are. And I want to talk about you meeting your husband, getting married and becoming a mama, because, you know, I love your story. I love the beautiful relationship that you and Dylan have. He's a good friend of mine as well. And I actually knew Dylan before I knew Sam. Or is it the other way around? Did I know you first?
I actually don't. I think probably. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe around the same time.
Yeah, I think that I actually met you guys around the same time. Yeah. And what it was like to kind of become a mom and that next level version of her in that way.
Yeah. Well, so Dylan and I met online on Instagram through our company. You know, we were all very young people in the company at the time. And I saw him on Instagram and I was like, oh my God, this is my husband. Right away. And I remember like screaming to my sister and being like literally screaming, like, I just found my husband. Like, this is my husband. Oh my God. Look at him. And so it's funny because I was kind of like secret. I wasn't secretly in love with him. I was in love with him. And I was telling every single person except for him. Literally everybody knew. Like, everybody knew. I was like, that's my husband. And like, he had no clue. He was like so oblivious to it. Anyways, so we became best friends for about 2.5-3 years. And finally, I had to tell him, because I realized we're just like spinning around in circles here. Like, I think I'm being so obvious. I'm talking about it 24/7 with every other human being. Like, can he really not know that I love him? And so I finally called him and that was terrifying to tell him, I'm actually in love with you and you're the only one I want. And I don't care what you say. I don't need you to like me back. I just need to be in my truest self. I need to be fully honest. I need to be in my power. And so I'm telling you. And then I couldn't stop talking because I did not want to hear his answer, even though I was really trying to be neutral. And then he basically just said, interesting. I'm intrigued. I felt it, but I didn't know. I don't know yet. I'm not sure yet. And I'm like, okay, cool.
I feel like that is such a Dylan answer. Like, if you know him, he really is this real thought leader. Like, this guy that I could imagine saying, let me just have a think about how I feel about this. Let me emotionally reflect on what the information is I just heard.
Exactly. And that was in September, and we were going on a trip to Guatemala together to work with some orphanages and stuff. And in March. So he's like, I think by Guatemala, I will probably have a clearer idea. So it was like 6 months later. Right. And I was like, okay, yeah, sounds good. Like, bye. Like, it was such a weird conversation. But it was amazing. And I felt so free after, because I literally stepped into my power. Like, that was the scariest thing I had ever done up till that point. Like, it was so scary, but that was my lesson of being in my authentic self and not needing anyone to validate me. Like, it was like, this is how I feel about you. And regardless of what you say, I'm enough and I'm good. And because that was that whole journey of self-love up until then. That was going through, you know, all these different guys that weren't it, that weren't who I truly wanted, who like, and it was me being so strict and not even dating anyone, seeing anyone, hooking up with anyone, nothing for 4 years before I ended up being with Dylan. Like I was really, and I, maybe this is my pattern. Like maybe in order for me to make a change when something's really hard for me to change, I have to be strict with myself. Like maybe that's what the whole vegan thing was. Maybe that's what the whole
is
now. Like, it's nothing. Like I'm not going on a date with you. I will not kiss you. I will not hook up with you. There is zero. If you are not the one I'm going to marry, it's nothing. And so that was the only way, again, that I could really make a change in my life.
Mm-hmm. So then you guys went on the trip, you fell in love and you had babies.
Well, basically, but what's ironic, it was only about 4 weeks later after the phone call that he called me and he's like, I can't stop thinking about you. Like, I think you're the one. And things changed really quickly. And then, you know, within a few weeks after that, we were official. And then, but we were in different countries. So this is all over the phone and FaceTime. And then in January of that year, we finally got together in person and we've pretty much been together ever since then. That was January 2017. The next January 2018, we had a baby. Like we birthed a baby. So like we got pregnant 4 months in to our relationship, or 4 months into like being together physically, and got married 8 months into our relationship, and we're living together literally like right away. Like as soon as it was January, we were together ever since.
I feel like it's one of those when you know moments.
It totally was. Like literally when we started dating, before we even made it official, like on Facebook, we had a conversation and he was like, listen, if we're going to do this, like, I think you're the one, like, I want to be with you for the rest of my life. And I think you're my soulmate and I want to like have kids with you. I want to get married. Like I'm all in. That's what he said to me. And I was like, me too. This is what I've been waiting for. Like, I've been waiting for you to say this for, I can't even believe you're saying this right now. Like, this is what I've been waiting for my whole life. But this is what I've been waiting for from you, knowing that it was you that I was waiting for 3 years. And so we were both all in. Like it was, there's never been a question of like, no, you're not the one. You're not it. Like, no, it's always been that. And, you know, no relationship is perfect. We definitely have our things and our growth and our commitment to each other from the very beginning was we are spiritual partners first. We're here to benefit each other's growth. We're here to uplift one another. We're here to encourage one another. We're here to support one another. And we're here to reflect to one another who our best self is. Wow. So I think that that's probably really rare. I think that a lot of people get into relationships. It's like, oh, I like you. I like you too. For us, it was like we had both done so much work on ourselves independently and we both wanted something very intentional. And so when we came together, it was just like, we both were like, yep. That's exactly what I've been wanting. That's exactly what I've been calling in. And like, these are our standards and this is what we both want. And everything matched. Like any dream that I had, like, I want to go do this and like live here and like do this. And he'd be like, yes, me too. Like, this is the kind of house I want. He'd be like, yes, me too. Like we are so on the same page. And I know that not everyone's like that. I know that like people have very different hobbies. They have very different likes. We've always worked together. Like we work together in every business we've done. So we're together 24/7 for the last, we're going on 7 years. We're going on 8 years. No, we're going on, I don't remember. This is our 6 year anniversary in August. So the next fall will be our 7 year anniversary being together, or the next November, sorry. So we've been together literally for almost 7 years, like 6.5 years, almost every single day, all day. And we don't really get sick of each other. Like, yeah, we'll be like, oh, you're annoying right now, get away from me. Like, but like, it's not like,
you're on the same page.
Yeah. It's like at the end of the day, it's like, give me a hug. I love you. Mm-hmm. We're in this together. Like, we're a partnership.
So tell me how you changed when you became a mom. So you're a mom of two beautiful girls. Tell me what that becoming her moment was for you in the journey of motherhood.
Oh, that's a good one. I have this quote in my book that says, no one ever told me, not one person in 9 months, that I would be meeting someone new. And it's not your baby, it's you. And that is everything. Like, I truly believe that when you have a child, when you birth a child, if you're, you know, if you want to be in a growth mode, it changes you. I mean, and it challenges you, and it's hard, and it's not always easy, and it's like the most beautiful, amazing love, and it's connection, and sometimes it's not connection, and it's all the things. Like, it's so much, it's everything. And I feel like for me, like, my pregnancy that was so challenging, of getting sick every day, all day for 9 months with my first baby, it was like the initiation process of motherhood. Like, pregnancies, for some people it's easy, but for a lot of people it's not. Birth is not easy. For some people it is. For some people love it. Not that many people do, but it is not easy. It is a initiation process of becoming the mother. And in my book and the whole goddess archetypes, there's kind of three phases of our life as women. And it's the maiden. We start as the maiden and then the mother. And even if you're not a physical mother to children, you're in this era of birthing things into creation, right? You're in this energy of like creating, you're a creator in that mother phase. And then you go to the crone, which is kind of like the postmenopausal wise woman phase. And so I think that for me, for some people, they might go to the mother in a different way. It might not necessarily be having a child that puts them into that mother phase. Could be a lot of other things. But for me, that was definitely the flip over. And that made me question and change so many things, because it wasn't just about me anymore. It was like, what do I want my baby girl to grow up around? Who do I want my baby girl to grow up around and learn from and be, you know, energetically, like, be around? Like, what patterns do they have? And do I want them putting that on her? Like, how do they speak? There's so many things that I didn't really think about before, because I felt like I could handle that with certain people. And then when it came to her, it was like, no, I can't have this dynamic. I can't have, you know, relationships that are draining me, because I physically do not have the energy anymore to have friendships that aren't filling my cup too. You know, like, there were so many things where I had to really learn how to set boundaries and stand in my power and change, again, my standard for who I was around, what I was around, what I was talking about, how I say things. And I'm not perfect. Literally today, I was like raising my voice or just speaking in a way that wasn't in my highest self as a mother. And my spiritual partner comes in, Sammy, you're talking to them like this.
Mm.
You need to talk to them like this. And so I go unconscious too, where I'm like, and, you know, for a second you get triggered because you're like, and then you're like, I said, thank you so much. And then I consciously chose to speak with my children with more intention, is really all it is, right? Like, sometimes we're just busy. We're trying to do five things at once. They're going, mommy, 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 mommy. And you're like, 1 second, blah, 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 you know? And it's like, there's another way. And you're not going to be perfect. But that's, motherhood is a whole other ball game. It really is. And it's amazing and it's challenging and it's like the duality of life in one. But I think that also each phase as kids bring different challenges too. So it's just loving those as you go and that and seeing it that it is there to grow you too. Like those challenges that your kids are giving there you are actually for your inner child that needs healing. They're actually for your adult self that needs to learn from them. Love. That is the gift of motherhood.
If you could give one piece of advice, just one, to someone transitioning into motherhood and into that next level of her, what would that piece of advice be?
Soak it all in. People tell you that all the time as a new mom, and you're like, yep, yeah, I got it. Thanks. This is all I'm doing. But it goes by so fast. And when you're in those moments of frustration, just thinking that one day they're going to be 18 and they're going to be not there and they're not going to want to call your name and cuddle you, like it snaps you back to reality and makes you appreciate that moment a lot more.
Wow. I love that. Such a beautiful piece of advice. So you touched on a little bit about your book, which I love, Sammy's book, so much. I probably was like one of the first people to read it, I think. I think I got it before release, maybe. Anyway, it's amazing. I'll link her book into the show notes so you can go get your copy. But what was the process of that like for you? What was the flow? What was the purpose? What was the energy? That process.
I love that question because it's literally your podcast becoming her. For me, her was this goddess version of myself. Mm-hmm. And the Latin word for goddess is Dia, D-E-A. And so my book is called I, Dia. So it's literally claiming her as I. It's literally becoming her, becoming the goddess. I, Dia. Mm-hmm. I, the goddess. So like, I love what you're doing by sharing people's stories on becoming her, whoever that is for you. For me, as I went through this whole journey that we touched on a lot today, but there's so much more in the book, it was creating this identity like we touched on. And for me, this identity was this goddess self. This goddess version was the highest version that I can imagine of myself being, felt like this goddess that walking with her head high, confident, loves herself, has boundaries, not going to let people walk all over her. You know, but she's like literally abundant. She acts out of love. She wants everyone to win. She understands everyone's connected. And she's like brilliantly smart, but like divinely guided, super intuitive, just this magical being, like this magical human. And so whenever I am on one of those intentional transitions to the next her, I always create an identity of who is she? Who does that look like? Right?
How does she walk? How does she talk?
When she walks in the room, what happens? Right? It's like that is a confidence and a energy that you can embody right now. Mm-hmm. You can choose it, but you have to choose it. It's intentional. You know, the people that have that, it's not just because they're special and you're not. It's because every day they are intentionally choosing up to show up as a certain version of themselves.
And it's not easy.
Have that choice.
It's not, no. It's never easy. So if you're sitting here listening to the podcast being like, it just feels so hard. We get it. It is
literally
choose that every day, like to choose to show up as a version of you. Like this morning, every cell in my body wanted to cancel my gym class at 6 a.m. Like every cell. And I was like, no, I am not that person anymore. I am the person who shows up as that next level of her, who does what she says she's going to do. And you have to choose it every day. It's difficult. It's hard, but it's worth it.
I used to, before I would go into a meeting, like a sales meeting, I would literally look at myself in the mirror in my car and say, you're at the top of the company. You're amazing. Everybody wants to join your business. Like I would like hype myself up, and then I would get out of the car and put my shoulders high, and I would walk in there with that energy. I intentionally did that every single time. Every single time I do a training or a call or a podcast, it's like, let the message I need to share come through me. Intention is everything. And so many of us are just on autopilot. Like, we're not putting a destination in the GPS and then we're wondering why we're not where we want to be. You got to set the intention.
I love that. Oh, so good. Honestly, we're going everywhere today. I love it. Like we did when we did our first one in Arizona. Yeah. But there is something that you haven't touched on that I do want to talk about before we finish up with what's next for Sammy. And that is that during the pandemic, you lost your father very suddenly. I know this is really difficult and I know you haven't spoken a lot about it, but I felt like it would be really important for you to share that for my audience, if you're happy to, and just talk a little bit about, you know, how that changed you and what that grief journey's looked like. I think you have one of the most beautiful perspectives on grief that I've ever known. And I think it could be really helpful for anybody going through it, whether it's the actual loss of someone in the physical form or it's a relationship that's broken down or a friendship that's broken down. So can you tell us a little bit about what that was like?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely feel for everybody who's lost someone close to them. And especially no matter what, because it's hard no matter what. It's hard when it's expected. It's hard when it's unexpected. It's always hard. And that's just the journey of our human self going through grief. But I think that, you know, for me, the most difficult thing was just full on choosing to face everything that I didn't want to face, you know, going back to where he passed away and like thinking about what happened and talking about it when it feels so uncomfortable and, you know, talking to family members and going through healing sessions with them, thinking back on my dad and, you know, thinking back on the challenges that he had, thinking back on his best times, thinking back on his worst times, like, and just loving him and accepting him through all of it, even when you want to feel like, why did this happen? Mm-hmm. Why now? Why, you know, oh, he didn't get to meet my daughter. Like all the reasons that we can go into the sadness, which we do, and that's fine. And I truly, truly honor everyone's grief journey. But I think that there's this other perspective that I really found through my dad's passing or transition, as I like to say, because I believe that we are not just humans. We are souls. We are this infinite energy, this consciousness that comes into a body. Like we come into body and we go back and our consciousness is expanded because we've had all these experiences. And then we come back into another body and we do it again and we learn more and we expand more. And then we go back and it's like the way that we change our clothes every day is the way that we change our bodies over lifetimes. That's what I believe. And I had this belief. And when I would talk about these things with my dad, he would be like, we just turn to dust and go back into earth. You know, like that's just the way of life. Like you're just going to be ground again. And like, you know, he had no spiritual perspective. He loved looking at the stars. He loved that. Like he loved the cosmos, but he didn't have that spiritual basis behind it. And I think that it's important for everybody to find something to believe in because it gives life more meaning.
I agree.
You know,
I really,
yeah.
I think it also gives you peace. I think it gives you just a more underlying day-to-day peace.
Yep. So when my dad passed, a few crazy things happened. My daughter saw him. She was 3 at the time. And we were driving in Sedona and she said, I want to go to the airport. And I looked at the stop sign and we were at Airport Road. So I'm like, turn there. And we're driving up the road and she goes, look, it's grandpa. It's grandpa. Look, grandpa's running on the road. Look at grandpa. He's so funny. She She's laughing her head off. And I'm bawling. This is 3 days after he died.
Wow.
We go up that road and realize the last time that I saw him in person was when he was visiting us in Arizona. And we went to Sedona. We went one restaurant and one place to look out on the scenery. And it was up that road. And later that year, my sister and I spread his ashes there in the same place. And so, you know, things like that where my three-year-old mm-hmm. out of nowhere is getting this crazy guidance. It's like, he's still here. He's still around. There's still, his energy is still loving on us, helping us, guiding us. And then he kept coming to me in dreams. And they say that when a loved one visits you in a dream, it's an actual visitation. And I used to have him all the time from my past grandparents. And there's times where I told him, like, your mom and dad visited me last night, and this is what they told me to tell you. And he'd be like, okay, you know, like, nope. But what's crazy is I had this one dream maybe 2 weeks after he transitioned back to his truest self, which is his full soul. That's the word transition. And he came to me and there was this like marble bridge, marble white bridge, kind of over to like the ether. Like you couldn't really see what was over there. I saw definitely some trees and there was like a river and I was walking along the river and I'm like coming up to this bridge and there's a chair right in front of the bridge. And my dad is sitting in the chair on this side of the bridge. And I'm like, Dad, like, are you back? Like once you lose someone, I think a lot of the time in your dream, it gets confusing because when they're in your dreams, which he was like every night, all the time, it was like, wait, are you alive again? Like you're always like, trying to figure out what's reality, right? Anyways, so in this dream, I'm like, are you back? And he's like, well, kind of. And he's like, I just wanted to tell you that you're right. Like, you really get it. Like, you really know. And if I had understood and known and listened to you, then maybe I would still be here, but I'm growing and I'm learning and I'm good.
Wow. Like,
and so that, you know, brought me so much inner peace. And again, there's layers. Like there's days where I'd wake up at 2 a.m, 3 a.m, and I would be like totally ridden with anxiety and grief. And I would just go sit in the shower and just like, to me, a shower feels like it's cleansing me. So I would just go sit there for like 30 minutes. And sometimes Dylan would just come in the middle of the night and just sit and like rub my back when I'm in the shower crying. And so, you know, it's a roller coaster. It's not linear. Mm-hmm. But I started to listen to all these near-death experience videos, and I highly recommend doing it because, you know, I think we all fear death, but it's inevitable. Like we all will die. Like it's just, that's part of life. It doesn't have to be such a horrible thing. And when I hear these stories from time and time again from these people who've had these experiences where they're physically dead and they're all seeing like this big light and they're seeing these little lights come in and out, like these little souls coming in and out, being birthed and then passing. And it's like, we're all just transitioning. We're all made up of the same stuff and that stuff is all connected. And I think that when you hear these things, like it makes you realize or believe that we're literally all one. Like we are all one. And there's the more that we separate ourselves in this human world, like there's no darkness. They all say that there's no darkness. There's no bad. There's nobody bad when you're back to who you truly are. It's only the contrast here and the decisions that you make here on Earth in the Earth school that create or that look like darkness. And so imagine if the entire world, imagine if all of us believed that we're all good and we all believe that we're all connected. So if you're doing something bad to someone else, you're doing it to yourself. If you're doing something good to someone else, you're doing it to yourself. It's the teachings of all the great wisdom, you know, treat others the way you'd want to be treated. Like all of that is a message of love one another, forgive your brother, like turn the other cheek, like all of those teachings from every ancient tradition is love, 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 love. Love yourself, love each other, and that
with kindness.
We're all one. Yeah. And so, you know, I, of course, as my human self, I miss my dad. I miss him, miss hugging him, miss talking to him. But from my spiritual self, I know that he's just on his next journey and I'm happy for him, you know? Wow. And I think that, again, it doesn't, you don't get there overnight at all, but it's a gift that you can give to your loved ones. And it's a gift that you can give to yourself to do the work to eventually get there. But you only get there by knowing that they're still with you, you know?
I mean, that's why I wanted you to share that before we finished up, because when you first spoke to me about it, I just thought it was such a profound way to look at death and to look at that, you know, tragic part of everybody's life that we're all going to face at some point in time. And I just thought it would be so valuable. So thank you for sharing so vulnerably about it. I think that you really would have helped a lot of people that are going through, you know, anything similar or will face something similar, just to have that level of belief and that level of peace. So as we finish up, I've loved doing this again with you. I'm actually learning more from doing it the second time, which I love. What is next for Samantha Dreiling, for her? I know you've obviously got your amazing elixir business. So tell us a bit about that. What's next for you?
Well, I'm on another journey of becoming her, because now I'm becoming a new her again, a new Dia, right? Because I'm in a whole world that I've never been in our new company. Owning a product company, being an entrepreneur slash founder slash co-CEO with my husband, you know, figuring out this whole new world of e-commerce and wholesaling and retailing and ads and like all, like there's so much. And so I'm really excited, because what I've learned over this, you know, decade or two is really that, like, you grow the most when you're out of your comfort zone. And I know that people hear that and they're like, yeah, I hear that all the time. I'm so out of my comfort zone right now. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing half the time. And I'm only now starting to learn like a whole new language in business and a whole new, how do you contact people? Like, who does this job? Who does it? Like, I'm so out of my comfort zone, but it feels so expansive. And I think that for a lot of people, you know, you get really good at something. Like, I got really good at doing everything in my wellness business. I feel like, yeah, I could totally do it. I can do that with my eyes closed. I can coach you. I can train you. I can tell you how to do this. I can help you get to here. If you're going to put in the work, I can, like, mm-hmm. I know how to do that. But this is like a whole nother thing, because it's expanding me in a territory where I'm a beginner again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we all need to embrace being a beginner. You know, even in our wellness business, like, there's a lot of people who don't even let themselves get started because they don't want to suck. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're gonna suck a little bit at the beginning, like, or maybe you're not gonna suck, but like, you're gonna be a beginner, you know. You have to start somewhere, and you're not gonna be a pro and an expert on your first try. It's gonna take practice, and by doing the practice, that actually builds your business, your company, your job, your resume, whatever, your muscles, like, whatever your goal is, by actually showing up and doing the practice and being okay with being not good at it is the only way that you're going to get good at it. So we need to embrace new beginnings and being a beginner and not being good at things, and not be so hard on ourselves around that. Like, it doesn't mean anything about you.
Mm-hmm.
My kids are banging on the wall behind me. I'm sorry if you can hear them. They're like, come on, mom.
No, I love it. And yeah, I love your products so much. Your soda, your elixirs. I think it's such an incredible concept. Mushroom elixir.
Yes, they're delicious.
Yes, they're so good. So where can everybody look at your website? Where can everybody get the products? I want to know everything.
So our website is anandaelixirs.com. Ananda is A-N-A-N-D-A.
I'll put it in the show notes as well.
Okay. Okay.
And I'll put the Instagram, and I'll put everything.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. So anandaelixirs.com. Ananda is the Sanskrit word for bliss. So we're all about inspiring you to follow your bliss. That's what we've been doing, just following what excites us and doing more of that every day, what really lifts you up. And yeah, Instagram is at Ananda Elixirs. And yeah, we'd love for you guys to check them out and give them a try. They're so fun and delicious. And we make mushroom mocktails with them, and they're super yummy.
They are so good. And guys, I'm obsessed with this product. I have it every single day. I bought loads of it back from the US, and it's definitely a company that you guys want to be following as well. So Sammy, I love you.
I love you. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I always learn so much from you. So guys, I'm going to link Sammy's Instagram, her businesses, all to the show notes. If you like this episode, please go ahead and share it. Tag us on Instagram. Let us know what you're learning. And I'm sure at some point I'll be on your podcast, and then we can do a whole different episode then.
Please. Yes. Yeah, soon. Like tomorrow, like soon.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next
week. Thank you.